Welcome to Trained, a podcast exploring the cutting edge of holistic fitness. I'm Ryan Flaherty, Senior Director of Performance at Nike. For now, I'm still recording from my home, calling up the world's leading experts in mindset, movement, nutrition, recovery, and sleep to discuss all the ways you can train your body and mind. Today, I'll be talking with a man who's won dozens of pro and college football championships without even setting foot on the field.
Events don't cause what you feel. How you talk to you about these events do. What I do with all athletes is something called a go-to script, which is a script I use to talk to me. And so one of the phrases I love to use is, so what, now what? That's my phrase. So you're out and you're playing a game. Quarterback throws an interception. He just made a mistake. Coach walks over and says, let's practice self-talk. So what, now what? Oh, okay. That happened. Now what? What's next?
That was sports psychologist Dr. Kevin Elko, talking about how he helps players and teams use self-talk to cultivate self-confidence. But that's just one tool in his kit. Dr. Elko's methods span everything from visualization to goal setting. If you want proof that they work, you can put on some sunglasses and take a look at his 27 championship rings from NFL and NCAA teams. Dr. Elko doesn't just help athletes gain focus. He helps them perform at the highest levels, season after season. Today, we'll be getting into the specific skill sets Dr. Elko teaches to those athletes. But we'll also talk about the skills he teaches to teams, how he's able to help dozens of individuals, that's dozens of backgrounds, needs, and egos, come together as more than the sum of their parts. And we'll look at how both of these mental skill sets, the individual and the social, can be even more valuable off the field. How you doing, Dr. Elko? Good to see you.
I'm good, Ryan. Nice to see you, buddy.
I've been super excited to have this conversation with you and let our audience get a chance to hear from you. So thanks for taking the time.
Thanks for having me.
So what drew you into sports psychology?
I was studying to be a coach and a teacher. And one day I was in a library getting ready to write a paper on exercise physiology. And I picked up this book on sports psychology, how to coach different athletes. And I'm just fascinated. I couldn't put it down. And I fell in love with it. And I just decided that day, it was kind of crazy. I just said, you know, I'm going to be a sports psychologist for the Olympic Committee, Pittsburgh Steelers and Dallas Cowboys. And that kind of happened. And
that's awesome.
I just kind of spoke it and it occurred. And I just fell in love with the topic. I just couldn't put it down. And performance psychology, and I've loved it ever since. And I went on to get my master's and doctorate in it.
What's some of the work you've done in pro and college sports?
Well, I've been with Alabama for a number of years. A little bling right there. I've been with Nick Saban all along at LSU and, of course, at Alabama, working constantly with him. Then I worked with the Pittsburgh Steelers. Mm-hmm. Was in there with Bill Cowher, and we started doing a lot of testing with athletes and looking at what mentally makes up the great athletes. And then went to the Cowboys, went to the Saints, went to a number of different teams, went to the New York Giants in the NFL, worked with the Philadelphia Eagles, got some more bling there. Then I worked with the University of Miami, did a lot of work with them down there as well, was at Florida State when Jimbo won it.
Those of you that can't see that are listening, every time I'm laughing, he's holding up a championship ring associated to the team that he's talking about. He's helped win many championships, which is why we're talking to him today. So would you mind sharing a little bit of, like, when you start working with the Philadelphia Eagles or University of Alabama, what's that process like for that team? And what's the experience they get when someone like you comes on board?
First thing you do, and it's interesting, Ryan, I was just recording in my studio I have in my home for Alabama's leadership today. The first step you really do is you got to get with the leadership and you have to teach a language. You teach the language of winning. I actually have a book that just came out right now called Believing is Seeing, and Nick Saban wrote the first chapter called The Language of Winning. And great teams have their own way they talk. So the very first thing you put in place is a language. At Alabama, here's our language. See a little, see a lot. See a lot, see nothing. And what that really means is how to have mental discipline, where to put your eyes, how to focus where you're headed. Another phrase we use, keep carrying the water until it becomes wine, about grit and finish. Another one we use is get comfortable being uncomfortable. So the first thing you do is you put the language in place and you have them start to speak it. And probably the strongest phrase is this one, so what, now what? That hangs in the back of so many weight rooms. And so you're really trying to get them to speak a language because you're trying to get the whole place to program their minds, neurons that fire together, wire together. The second step is you get the leaders and you teach ownership. That's what's behind all these rings, ownership and accountability.
So I want to stop you on language for a second because it's such an important topic and we could probably cover a good 2 hours on this one alone. But self-talk is one of the biggest tools that I use, that I talk with my athletes with. I know you are a massive proponent of this, which is where your language comes in. Can you talk about how language and self-talk go together?
So listen to this phrase, Ryan. I said to myself, there's two people in that phrase, I am myself. And what you're really trying to teach the athlete to do is how to have conversation with themselves to take them to peak performance levels. And when you do it over and over again, every time we speak, every time we think, we're practicing brain chemistry. And you do it over and over again, you wire your brain. And you start to get it wired and you want to think, what conversation do I want to have with myself during different times of my athletic career? When I'm training, when I don't feel like training, on the field, when I need to focus my mind.
I'm sure that conversation at first is a little difficult for them to understand. Like, you want me to talk to myself? You know, crazy people do that. But the alternative is listening to yourself, which can be detrimental to not only your performance, but your health, your mental health, and physical health. But can you talk a little bit about how you help people just get started on that process of self-talk?
What you do is you first explain what I just explained to you. Okay, here's self-talk and here's how it can help. And it's based on the premise that events don't cause what you feel, how you talk to you about these events do. Mm-hmm. What I do with all athletes is something called a go-to script, which is a script I use to talk to me. And so one of the phrases I love to use is, so what, now what? That's my phrase. So you're out and you're playing a game, okay? And I work with NFL teams. A quarterback throws an interception. Now, he comes and his mood is down. He just made a mistake. Coach walks over and says, let's practice self-talk. So what, now what? Oh, okay. That happened. Now what? What's next? And so that self-talk phrase is what changes your attitude. If I come home and there's a member of my family there and they are in not a good mood, let's just say, I'll say to myself, Kevin, let go of your need to be right. I say this all the time. Our brains are Velcro for the bad because our brains really still think it's their job to help us survive. So you remember the bad, you remember the things that were challenging, and you try to, and you keep repeating. That's why what you said earlier, self-talk, is real important. You reprogram your brain.
Yeah. How applicable is what you do with teams to us in our everyday lives? I mean, when you talk about culture, I think instantly to, like, you know, I work at Nike and we talk about a culture all the time. I think biggest difference I've seen, again, playing on teams my whole life, I think you realize when you watch teams that really focus on culture, it's like an everyday practice. It's something they work on and talk about every day. Sometimes in businesses, culture is talked about, but it's not something that you see really practiced or worked on every single day. How do people apply, or can they apply, a lot of what you do in their own lives, whether that be at their business or even in their family at home?
It's extremely applicable because attitude is not a gene, it's a muscle. So let's look at that concept. I got up and I ran sprints this morning. I went over the hill. I do HIIT training. Why would I do that? Because my heart is a muscle, and within 48 to 72 hours, it will start to atrophy. Attitude's the same way, Ryan. It's the exact same way. And so we think, I'm going to go here this one time. I'm going to get to this one time, and then bang, I'll be good. And so it's establish your attitude by a renewing of your mind, not a re-olding, a renewing. And so we have to keep teaching and reteaching just like you would a muscle. And so I think it's extremely applicable because when you look at this whole mindset of vision, of self-talk, of the way you interact with yourself, it's the same thing in sport as it would be in being happy, being productive, being somebody that goes out and is a blessing to others. The theories that you're coming up with based on research and science are not just germane to sport. They're germane to your whole life, to everything.
Yeah. Yeah. And you made a comment. I talk to my athletes a lot about, you know, interpersonal, interpersonal, obviously dealing with yourself and then dealing socially with your team and having skills for yourself and also that you pass to your team as a leader. And one of the things you mentioned earlier was just that idea of ownership and responsibility. Can you talk a little bit about that?
I speak it repetitiously every time I'm out there. The best year of your life be the year you take ownership of every problem, every challenge in your life. That'll be the best year of your life. Charlie Wiedemeyer played football for Michigan State. I now work up there with Mel Tucker. Charlie Wiedemeyer graduated in 1970, wanted to be head high school football coach, became the head football coach at Los Gatos High School in California. As soon as he did, Ryan, he was diagnosed with Lou Gehrig's disease. He was given 1 year to live and he couldn't speak. He owned it. Here's what ownership looks like. It means here's what I have. What do I do with it? Well, I'm going to break down responsibility. Responding with ability. What he did is he developed a language. This meant a word. That meant a word. Every time he moved his body, it meant a word to his wife. She coached a team. He didn't. He lived 32 years. He's the winningest coach in the history of California football because he owned it. That's what ownership is. Now, this is what I have. How do I get out of self-pity? How do I go forward? And what do I do with it? So that's what he did. Chuck Pagano, a friend of mine, head coach of Indianapolis Colts, gets cancer. And my book, The Sender, is about interacting with him. Now he's defense coordinator for Chicago Bears. He's in a cancer ward. Ownership. So he coached a whole year texting, emailing. He said it was the best year I ever had coaching. It was the only time he's sure everybody listened to him. You know, because he went that route. He goes, they never listened to him before. I'm sure they were texting me back. And he obviously thinks that was one of his best years. So ownership, this is what happened to me. Even me in my own life, I could go on in detail and tell you, like, this is what happened. Here's how I decided to own it. And your life would change it. That was our one phrase rally call the whole year when we won it at the Eagles. Every time Doug Peterson, head coach, spoke, he put in letters behind him, ownership. It'll be the best year of your life.
So we've had Angela Duckworth on the podcast a few times. She talks about resilience and grit and how it's a key contributor to success. And so many of the athletes I've worked with, some of the ones that have reached the highest levels in the NFL, in the NBA, in tennis, and in golf, have gone through some difficult things in life. They've been resilient many times, overcome many obstacles in their life. Why do you think grit and resilience is such a key variable in success?
First, Ryan, let's differ the two. Grit is my ability to finish something I started. Cal Newport Jr. is at MIT. He goes, the number one factor I have seen in working with successful people, executives, they have one obsession. They have to finish everything they started. So grit is I start something, I finish it. Resiliency is my ability to come back after a setback. If you are doing anything long enough, I don't care what it is, you're going to have a setback. As of this time, this environment we're in today, they have now identified, a lot of the experts, resiliency as the factor over all others because everybody has some kind of setback. And the difference is people who have resiliency have the same emotions anybody else has, but they're not used by their emotions. They take their emotions and use them. There's a number of variables involved with the comeback. One, self-concept. You know, I went out to Las Vegas. My friend said, let's go see Cher. And yeah, I'm not necessarily a Cher fan. I like Cher, but she said something I love. She was talking about her whole career and the ups and the downs. And she said, I said something to me all the time. I wasn't made to break. So there's her self-concept. She caught me. She goes, I said to myself, oh, Kevin's zeroed in now. I said to myself, I wasn't made to break. And so one of the big things with resiliency is the self-concept. The other is faith. And it's the faith that I believe that I can make a comeback, that I have what it takes, that this environment I'm in, that there are people around me. And faith is a funny thing. That's why I wrote the last book I just wrote, Believing is Seeing. Because faith is, even though I've had a setback, I don't believe I am a setback. Even though things didn't go the way I wanted them to go, I don't believe I'm a loser, and I have faith that I can come forward again. Why? I just chose it.
I agree 100%, and I've seen it firsthand in all the athletes I work with. And you know, people always ask me, like, what's it like working with some of these top athletes? And I always tell them that, like, one of the major components of every athlete I work with that reaches high levels is they have this almost naive belief in themselves. It's like Saquon Barkley, an example. When he first told me what his goals were as an athlete, what his dream was, and what he felt like he was going to become in the NFL, I laughed because I was like, yeah, come on, man. And then lo and behold, he is now taking steps every season to do what he told me he was going to do. So I just want to pause on that because I think for people listening, a lot of people who haven't reached the goals that they've set for themselves or maybe set a goal early in life or had a dream early in life and it didn't happen. And so they've inherently kind of quit on a lot of other things and now find themselves not being able to accomplish small goals. And a lot of that I feel like is because they need to tap back into what do they believe about themselves and who around them believes, what do they believe about them as well? Because it's not just what we believe, it's about the people around us and what they believe too. Can you talk a little bit about that, about how you attack those belief systems and athletes you work with and coaches?
This is in Believing is Seeing. Wilma Rudolph had scarlet fever when she was 4 years old. She lost use of her left leg. She's paralyzed. The doctor says, you're never going to walk again. Her mother said, yes, you will. 7 years old, she took off the brakes, started walking. At 13, she went to the doctor, says, I want to run a race. Are you crazy? You can't run a race. Her mother said, yes, you will. She won 3 gold medals in the Olympics. And they interviewed her and said, how'd you do all this? She said, well, the doctors and the experts said, never walk again. My mother said, yes, you will. Here comes the key word. I decided to believe my mom. When you believe in it and you hold it, and you hold it there, and you have to choose it, you almost have to be a little bit nutty, almost a little bit delusional to be a success, yeah. As you're saying. You almost have to have a delusional mindset, but then your actions have to follow. I loved Dolly Parton. I used to work in this grocery store when I was in college, and we'd start at 7:30 in the morning on Saturday, finish at 6 at night. Our feet were killing us, but Dolly Parton would come on at 5:30, so we knew we were almost done, so I loved Dolly Parton. And she would, you know, I love some of her phrases. My favorite is, decide who you are and be it on purpose. I'd say a little bit different. Decide who you would like to be. Have faith in it and choose to talk to you on purpose. Now, you just said about people around you. When somebody feels connected to and they see you as a person, the relationship a coach can have with connection, the relationship another player has with connection, when somebody really connects with them and they believe in them, then they could teach them and say, I have faith in you. I think you're extraordinary. I think that you've given a gift. I think you could really manifest this gift once the connection's there. And so what Wilma Rudolph had was a connection with her mother. Now, Coach Saban isn't necessarily a positive guy, but he's a connector. Yeah, I tell people all the time, well, I've gone in and said, Coach, what do you want me to say to the team? How in the blank do I know? If I knew what the blank to say, I would have said, I'm like, Roll Tide. But best connector I've ever seen. He'll connect with you one-on-one, and basically what'll come to you is, I believe in you. If I really believe in you, how can I let you go out there and go at that speed? Go half, you know what? So I think it is, faith is a choice, number one. Decide who you want to be and decide, I got to have faith in it.
After the break, Kevin will talk to us about the mindset he's telling athletes to adopt in these times, how to restore trust on a team, and what he does every day to stay on track with his goals.
If you're enjoying this episode of Trained, here's some good news. You'll find more wellness expertise every day on Nike.com, the Nike app, the Nike Run Club app, and the Nike Training Club app. And in regions where NTC Premium is available, that's free now too. You can learn more about movement, mindset, nutrition, recovery, and sleep, and you can get started on a workout as soon as you finish this episode.
People listening right now are dealing with a lot, obviously, and you're still working with teams and athletes who are just as affected. So can you talk a little bit about how you're helping them deal with it and how that could apply to our lives? Is there any language that you're using?
Don't go through it, grow through it. Everyone's going to go through it. No, grow through it and come together and learn how to grow. And it's set up a different world as we have going here, more of a virtual world, but don't go through it, grow through it. Things come out of this and you have to trust. I don't know what's going to come out of it, but I have a phrase, it happens for me. Now, I'm not going to be naive because people have lost their lives, people have lost their jobs, but I have to trust that somehow I'm going to grow. And I think it's a great time to teach ourselves, to teach our young people, resiliency. Mm-hmm. How do we come back? How do we learn? How do we keep having faith? How do we trust life? And what you teach athletes is you constantly prepare. And it might be virtually, but you're constantly challenging to bring up the level of your teammates. At the same time, we have to come to grips with uncertainty. And the talk I try to do is how to swim really good in choppy waters. Florence Chadwick was swimming from Catalina Island to California, like a 21-mile swim. She got in the water. It was cold. It was this time of year. Millions were watching on TV. No woman's ever done it. There are sharks by her. They're shooting to get the sharks away. Fog. That was the problem. She swam 15 hours. Fog. She finally said, let me come up in the boat. Fog was thick. And she looked. She's right next to shore. She couldn't see the shore because of fog. She did a second time with a mindset, with self-talk. And this time she said to herself over and over and over, there's land on the other side of that fog. This time she did 2 hours faster than any man. We've got to talk to ourselves to keep that concept alive. There's land on the other side of that fog. And we have to keep going and having a vision. And so that's why we walk by faith, not by sight. I have to have a vision, Ryan, no matter what. And I don't know when it will manifest. I don't know what will be brought to me. My other one, Rob Conrad, I'm with the Dolphins. I go, Rob, I've never, he's a running back. I never saw you run out of bounds, ever. And he said, well, I did one day. And Jimmy Johnson, head coach, said, if you run out of bounds again, I'm going to cut you. Never ran out of bounds again. Neurons are fired together, wire together. So he did it over and over and over and over. He wired his brain. We practice thinking and groove our brains. Groove your brains with two things right now you keep saying to yourself. One, there's land on the other side of that fog. I don't know where the land comes. Keep swimming. Two, don't run out of bounds. And quit letting your feelings drive you. I feel like, look, if you and I are running down a sideline and four guys running after us 300 pounds, are you going to feel like staying in bounds?
No.
Our life's the same way, Ryan. We can't let our feelings just go ahead and govern everything. I feel like quitting. I feel like stopping. I feel self-pity. Mm. And what you can't do is comparison. All upset comes from comparison. We had a season last season. We don't have it this season. Hey, they're over there playing. We're not getting to play. No win in comparison.
Completely agree. Can you talk a little bit about, like, if a team were to break down, how can they restore their trust and get back on track? What are some of the tips you would give them to get the train back on the rails?
There's only a few ball players that really set the tempo one way or another. And you know who they are at certain teams. And you really want to get a couple of those guys to get the faith back. And so you just meet, we talk about connection. You just go and meet with those guys first. And you go and talk about, let's go ahead and get that going. Like, you have to just get faith back in key people. And there's usually something with mental clutter. There's usually somebody paying attention to something they can't do anything about, or a personal issue. And so you have to go to your leaders. And sometimes the best performers aren't your leaders, but the guys who are connected and see what's going on and get the other guys focused and going again. And so I usually go to the Paul Revere's of the team and say, yeah, look, let's get this thing addressed and let's go give people faith and get it going again. And, you know, the phrase I always use says, I've seen dogs a lot sicker than this get well. And I've seen it a lot of times. They come back and they'll win.
You just mentioned mental clutter, something I really think is important for people to hear. Can you talk about mental clutter, why it's important to understand, and then how do you deal with it?
Mental clutter is a thought you have that is outside your area of locus of control that you can't do anything about. So one thing I'm doing with our teams is I have them draw a box. And see that box, that's all you can control. That's your life. That's your actions. That's the things that you say and do. And I have them put WIN in that box. What's important now? And I have them write up nitty-gritty goals. This is my daily activity. Here's what we're going to do. And it's been a powerful thing. And I say, pay attention to this. And then I have them put phrases on the outside of that box. And here's one of them. Change the changeable, accept the unchangeable, remove the unacceptable. And you have to learn to quit paying attention to that. I can't do anything about. And when you can do that and pay attention to things that do matter, can't do anything sometimes about injury, can't do things about schedule, can't do things about COVID. What can I do something about? Those nitty-gritty goals we set up.
How do you suggest people work on that, creating that? What do you call them? What kind of goals are they? They're
nitty-gritty.
Yeah. How do you do it for yourself?
I always work from a notebook. And you're always logging your notebook. I hand write mine. And then I do nitty-gritty goals. And the phrase is, less arrows, more wood. Don't need a lot. But here's the people I'm going to connect with. Here's the design I'm going to do on my programs. Here's internal people I'm going to connect with. And those are your nitty-gritty goals. And you stay on them. And what helps people really rise above is when they share the nitty-gritty goals. Transparency brings people performance up through the roof. So when you share them and they become illuminated, that's when you achieve them. So you want to write out your nitty-gritty goals, but you want to share them to start the day. And at the end of the day, I have people rate on a scale 1 to 10. Where were you? If they go, I was below a 7, what do you need to do different? If I was below an 8, that's too easy. And I have them rate that and stay on their nitty-gritty goals all day long. I have a big goal of having a healthy body. So what's my nitty-gritty goals? One is hit training every day, and I can measure it. So I run over this hill. I go over it. They told me Cleveland Clinic, you run 2.5 hour sprints a week, you're going to live a long time. Well, I want to live a long time. I tell people I want to go to my kids' wedding and do a little cabbage patch dance. You know, it's my job to annoy my kids. So can I measure that? Yeah, I got a little Garmin watch. I look at my heart rate. I drive it up. I can measure that. They said, you got to become a vegan. Can I measure that? Yeah, I write down, here's the food I'm going to eat. Nothing with a mother, nothing with a face. That's what I eat. Can I measure it? Absolutely. You have to meditate 3 times a day. I could do that. So I measure it and I share it. And then a day I look, do you do those things? That's the process.
Funny, because handwriting it down, I think I always tell my athletes to do that. They always look at me kind of funny when I say that, because everything's so electronic these days and tech, you know, everyone's on their phones. No one uses a notebook anymore. No one writes it down.
Yeah, I do.
There's something really powerful in that, I think, writing it down. And every one of them has said that by writing it out, it really starts to sink in and, you know, crossing things off. There's something you feel a sense of accomplishment by doing that. What are some of the things that you see for people that are the biggest distractions that are holding them back from accomplishing those goals that will help them get to where they want to be?
Cell phone. Self and distraction is the opiate of today, Ryan. I mean, what is the distraction? Distraction. There's a payoff for a distraction, because staying disciplined is uncomfortable. Staying disciplined isn't always easy. And so our mind is really trained to be distracted. The cell phone is probably one of the biggest ones.
Yeah.
To be great is uncomfortable. To be healthy is uncomfortable. To have a healthy body is uncomfortable. You know, to have warm, rewarding relationships is at times uncomfortable. And you want the distraction because it gives you what you want in that moment.
Yeah, it is. It's a bit of a drug. I love that you call that out, because that's one of the biggest areas my athletes I've seen we've had to really kind of address recently. And one of the things that we work on is this idea of, when you write your schedule out, when you write your process out, even scheduling in time to use your phone, they've noticed there's draw and pull, like this addictive pull, like it would be to a drug, to their phone throughout the day when they don't have it scheduled in. The ones that do separate themselves from the good to the great are the ones who have this ability to kind of put the phone away, put it down, focus on not being distracted, controlling their inputs and getting through it. When it comes to trying to remain connected with people around us, what advice are you giving to people who can't be with each other in person to stay connected, to find that connection?
First of all, change your language. Language means everything. Let's quit using this phrase, social distancing. You're not social distance, you're physical distancing. And I think language matters. You're physical distancing. Connection is important. And connection is intentional. Maybe before it didn't have to be intentional, because I was just walking through the hallway of Nike, but I'm not doing that now. So what's intentional? When I do my nitty-gritty goals, I put on there, these are people I want to connect with today. Here's the people I want to be part of today. Here's the people I want to experience today. Learn to connect intentional, because before it wasn't. It was, hey, it's time to go to lunch. Want to go? Yeah, I'll go. That's not going to happen today. You say, look, I want to talk with you, connect with you at this time today. Call people, you know, Skype people. Quit being so interesting and learn to be interested, because COVID will be over. But the relationships made through it won't. They will last well beyond it, and we'll remember it. America said this is the most unhappy they've been for 50 years. 70% of Americans said this is their lowest point they've ever been in. Anxiety is twice as high now as it was a year ago. You don't have to be part of those statistics. Connect with people. We need one another. Call people. Call friends. Call old cousins. Call people you haven't connected with for a while. It is therapeutic. And call and just say, hey, I'm interested in you. Stay connected to people, which means one phrase, I see you as a person. That's what connection is.
Such a great way to end. I take more notes talking to you than I do to anybody else. Thank you for your time. Thanks for talking with us, and I appreciate you.
I appreciate you, knowing you for a long time, know your spirit, know how you help so many people out there. Just keep on doing it. It'll come back your way, and thanks for making me part of what you do.
Whenever I talk with Dr. Elko, I know I'm going to get insight into how elite athletes and coaches use mental skills to boost performance. But what was really powerful for me today was hearing about how everyone can use those skills in 2020. So many of us are feeling isolated by physical distancing, or sometimes by the very technology that's supposed to help. It makes sense that Dr. Elko would use one word again and again: connection. He emphasized the connection between coach and player. He got into connection with a sense of self, and he reminded us of how important it is right now to make time. Like actually writing it down in a schedule to connect with the people in our lives, however we can. For most of us, that's the team that really matters. Next week, I'll be talking with Robin Berzin, one of the most influential MDs working today, about the connections between nutrition, movement, and mindset, and why it's vital that they all meet in the doctor's office. This has been Trained. Talk to you soon. If you've enjoyed this episode of Trained, help us spread the word by rating and reviewing the podcast. That way we can keep making great episodes for you to listen to. And it helps other people find us too. If you've got a question for me or my guests, or a topic you'd like to see covered, email me at trained@nike.com, and I'll see what I can do.
Thanks for listening to Trained. Just a reminder, always talk with your doctor before starting any training or nutrition program. The information we provide, it's not a substitute for medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. And the individual opinions expressed here are just that, opinions. They shouldn't be taken as fact.